Thompson flips it ahead. Dick Ritchie with a shot. He scores! 2-0 Ducks. Clockwork three by Wilson. Penalty is over. Kasha out of the box. Subban tees one up. Score!
Just tremendous patience by P.K. Subban. His head up, he's waiting for the traffic to get there. And Philip Forsberg is the guy who provides a screen.
Neal with a shot, that was blocked by Lindholm. Now Arvidsson out in front, saved by Gibson, they score! The Predators tie it!
The Ducks wanted a penalty called. Anaheim player gets knocked down and they just stay with it. And for John Gibson, he just couldn't get a handle on the puck.
Now it is Perry. In front, score! The Ducks win game four. Perry threw it towards the net. Nate Thompson in front. Anaheim wins it 3-2.
P.K. Subban was there also, and it looked like it hit his stick first. That goal will be Corey Perry's goal, and Anaheim finds a way to come back in overtime and win.
They're a good team, so we know every game is going to be a battle, and I think if there's a positive that we showed tonight is that when we want to play our game, we can't be stopped, and I felt we did a good job in the third period, like I said, of battling back, giving ourselves an opportunity to win the game. We had chances in overtime, didn't go our way, and you throw pucks at the net, good things will happen, and they threw one in and went off my stick, and tough one.
We knew coming into overtime, you put that period behind you. Go out, play like you did in the first period, on our toes, getting pucks in deep. We kind of changed the momentum there, and we got some chances, and we got a break.
Corey Perry, after the game, you know who the other guy is. Welcome back, Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690, hour number three, Friday Scrum edition of Habs Lunch in its entirety between 6 and 7, along with Mitch Gallo and Dave Trentadue. Best of three, that's what the Western Conference Final is now down to. What happens in the Eastern Conference Final, game four tonight?
Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Dagwoods, now open in Laval, on Saint-Marte and Daniel Johnson. Bring Dagwoods' unique taste to your neighborhood. Visit dagwoods.ca for franchising information.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm good, Mitch. How you doing?
Okay, you in the rink?
I am. I'm sitting right on the end of the Ottawa Senators bench.
Right on the bench, as you were a couple of days ago. Wow. What did you make of what you saw last night? I mean, every time you think that there's an intensity level that can't be surpassed, they do it.
Well, I think the biggest thing out of that game was the start that Anaheim had. You think about that start and how it translated to the confidence for their team. You know, they knew they were in a tough spot. They needed to have a good start or that crowd can just bury you. And the fact they were able to get a 2-0 lead, they were able to dominate the first period on the shot clock. They did a lot of things you have to do if you're going to win in that environment. So I think the confidence of Anaheim going into Game 5 at home has got to be pretty high. But I would say this, in defense of Nashville, they showed a lot last night, especially near the end, and that would concern me if I was coaching. Not if I were playing, but if I was coaching Anaheim, that would concern me a little bit.
How so? Elaborate.
Because I look at guys that are elevating for them. And whether it's PK, whether it's Forsberg, whether it's Ryan Johansson, there's still another gear there. And Randy Carlyle will know that. He'll have that information coming from their advanced scouts. Because this is what I saw in the St. Louis series. There was a couple games where those guys, the go-to guys, really didn't elevate for Nashville and eventually led to St. Louis winning games. And then all of a sudden, ba-boom, those guys stepped up, and you could see it was going to translate from game to game, and that's when it became a problem. So I'm sure as a coach, you're getting all this information, you digest it. You don't relay that to your players, but you make sure that they're aware that you can't let your guard down.
The one thing they wanted to make sure that we established a strong start, and we did that with an exclamation mark. So with our performance the other night, we felt we're flat, and we didn't have the necessary emotion and energy to play to the level that they played to. So we felt, you know, we'll take a look at their schedule, see what we've done, and take a look and say, hey, or what are we better served to do to refresh our group? And we look like a refreshed group tonight.
It almost sounds like Mike Sullivan after Pittsburgh's loss in Ottawa and what we might be preparing for where you are tonight.
Well, I know the Pittsburgh team. I know the Ottawa team. I know both teams really well. I think Ottawa's obviously going to try to do exactly what they did in Game 3, which was tremendous. But knowing Pittsburgh, they'll adjust. And one of the things I think you'll see them adjust to is face-off protocols. I don't think they'll get wiped out on face-offs like they were in Game 3, like they were in Game 1. They'll probably play more like they were in Game 2. So they'll be, there are different things you need to identify when you go into these kinds of games if you're the road team. What helped us, what hurt us? And then you fix, obviously, what hurt you. And one of the things that really hurt them in Game 3 was their inability to win face-offs consistently. The other thing that hurt them was the tempo of the puck coming off the boards. They weren't ready for that for whatever reason, so they're going to have to adapt to that. And the third thing is they got to get bodies. If I were doing it for Mike Sullivan, those would be the three things I'd focus in on. Getting bodies to the net, controlling and being ready for fast pace off the dasher boards, and winning faceoffs. If you fix those three things, you got a chance to win this game.
Back to Ottawa and Pittsburgh tonight in just a moment. I just wanted to revisit last night, and Mitch Gallo, if you want to talk about anything you saw last night, jump in. They took Shea Theodore out of the lineup, put Kevin Bieksa in, who was front and center for some good reasons and some bad reasons. Did that surprise you?
No, because I think that's one of the reasons why you heard Randy talk about the start they had. You bring in a Brahma bull like Bieksa, and that's what he is. He is a rough customer. He understands playoff hockey, and he's an older guy that knows the end of the line is near. He's been at this a long time, so he's not going to pass up any chance. It kind of reminds me a little bit, and again, I try to go back to factual moments in my career. Gordy Roberts, who played for us, he was a guy near the end of his career, and Scott used to tell me all the time, at the end of a game, get him on the ice, because he's going to be respected by the officials. Even in those days,
Pierre?
You can tackle guys and get away with it. Yeah,
Gallo's waving at me here.
Yeah, no, just because we have a pretty serious breaking story from this series specifically, as reports are that Ryan Johansson suffered a left thigh injury last night. He needed surgery, and he's out for the rest of the playoffs.
My goodness.
That's significant. That's
wow.
A major body blow.
Did you see? The camera showed him leaving the bench at one point, but I can't.
Well, they never talked about it on the broadcast, and I saw the hit. I know exactly when it was. They never talked about it, but you could see he was definitely laboring, getting off, and for whatever reason, it was never brought up. Now, that's serious, because if he had surgery last night, there has to be either a rupture in the upper thigh or something that he couldn't get on a plane to fly because it'd be too dangerous.
Well, Pierre, Mike Fisher also.
That's tough.
And Mike Fisher got dinged last night. That when we saw the replay, initially it was, you saw them attending to a cut, but it was obviously more serious than a cut. And when they showed the replay, it's almost like he got sandwiched. His head got sandwiched between two guys. Right. I'm just speculating that he may have a concussion because he didn't come back.
I'm not going to go down that road. I mean, it's really important that you don't. I can't, anyways, speculate on that because I just don't know. I'm watching from afar. But I would say this: it didn't look good.
Yeah,
sure didn't look good. If they miss both, and they clearly won't have Ryan Johansson, Mitch Gallo, great reporting telling us what it is. He's out for the playoffs. If they don't have Fisher, what has to happen there then is going to have to be Pontus Aberg will have to step up. Or Auberg, I should say, and they'll have to. I mean, oh my, Yarncroke will have to go to another level. Vernon Fiddler will have to get elevated minutes. I mean, that throws into complete disarray their team. Now, the one thing that Forsberg can play center, he can play center or wing. So 2/3 of that top line would stay together, and maybe you can find a guy that's got a high engine that can play on the other side where Forsberg plays. Then maybe you can survive it, but it's going to be tough now. This is a huge story. Really big story.
The fact that there's potentially three games maximum left, as opposed to maybe six or seven. I'm just trying to figure out how these teams are now thinking. How is Anaheim reacting to this? How we know how down Nashville must be.
Well, yeah, you're down, but you got to get up. I mean, we went through this in '92. Mario's hand was broken by an Adam Graves slash, and they wrote us off. You know, we won game one in New York, lost game two. Mario's hand was broken. We lost game three, and we were down by two goals in the last few minutes of game four. And then we had a miraculous comeback. Ronnie Francis with a shorthanded goal from center ice. And at that moment, when he scored, the entire series changed. And that team went on to win 11 straight games to win the Cup. No team has ever done that. The 92 Penguins were able to do that. I'm not writing Nashville off at all because for whatever reason, you can find a way whether it's game planning, whether it's players coming together, whether it's miraculous goaltending performances, whatever it is, something can always happen to give you a chance. But you have to have the right frame of mind. You truly have to have the right frame of mind.
Pierre, I have no idea, nobody at this point, unless it's Ryan Johansson, we have no idea how this went down, what exactly happened, how he got hurt. But we just talked to Ray. You know, the World Hockey Championship is in there in Cologne, Germany. Canada plays Russia tomorrow. And I was asking him about the referees letting a lot go.
There is no tone. And so the guys aren't dumb. Like, if I can cross-check somebody, and I'm not going to get a penalty, then I'm going to cross-check them. If I can trip a guy in a certain portion of the ice because I know they're not calling many penalties there, then I'm going to trip them. Why not? So you can say, well, Johansson has to fight through that. Oh, so he has to fight through penalties not being called? Okay, I get it. I understand that. But that's one way of looking at it. Or two, you can say, well, he should just give it back to Kessler. So say Ryan Johansson's going around and he's in wrestling matches with Kessler and he's tripping him and cross-checking him and slashing him at every turn. Ryan Johansson's job is to produce offense. How does any of that help him? How does any of that help the Nashville Predators? And the answer is it doesn't.
And now, again, Ray was with us in the last half hour. Now we learn in the last couple of minutes, Ryan Johansson underwent surgery, left a leg, and he's done. He is done for the playoffs. Now, again, we don't know what happened here, but clearly the rule book was thrown out last night.
Oh, for both teams.
Right. Both teams were angry. Both teams were angry at both officials. Yeah.
And look at the tying goal. Are you going to tell me there wasn't a cross check involved in the tying goal?
Was Johansson on the ice then? Wasn't it Johansson who cross checked Josh Manson?
Yeah, it was.
So
behind the net, it was him.
Yeah.
So I'm just telling you, there was a cross check on the tying goal.
Yeah, it was Johansson on Manson.
Like, but this is what we've talked about quite often. All the players want is a standard, but they want a fair standard, not a shifting scale. And everybody talks about protecting the stars. No, the stars should be allowed to play, just like everybody else should be allowed to play. And if you're going to let lesser players tackle or hook or hold and not call it, then you got to build your team appropriately. But isn't that wrong? Isn't that wrong?
Yep.
Because it shouldn't be that way.
Well, prior to this news, the story today of the playoffs was Mike Sullivan going back to Matt Murray in goal in place of Marc-Andre Fleury. What did you think? What do you think?
I was a little bit surprised when I heard about it this morning. I thought about it after I heard, because I really thought they'd go back to Fleury because they had the safety net of a game five at home on Sunday afternoon. But I think they realize that they can't mess around, and they think that internally they must think that Murray gives them the best chance. The one thing I would share with you is that even though Mike Sullivan makes the call because he's a head coach, the one thing I know about their staff, that was a team decision. That was a team coaching staff decision. It wasn't one guy making the call. It was everybody putting their input in. They have a very veteran-oriented type staff with Jacques Martin, Rick Tocchet, and Mike Bales. And they really do a lot of team coaching. So I would not be surprised if that was an arduous decision, but one that was painstakingly researched before they made it.
Yeah, it's again, they ought to know their team better than anybody, right? It's just, I'm with
exactly.
You. I was surprised because I haven't seen Fleury play this well. Since they won that cup initially, but they're going to a guy who helped them win the cup a year ago. So it's
that. Right. Sorry. Go ahead.
I understand it's a tough call, but I thought, you know, normally a veteran team will lean towards the veteran normally, but again, they should know this better than we do.
The other thing that I was surprised by is knowing how popular Marc-Andre is amongst his teammates, how popular he is with the coaching staff and the management team. So I thought there'd be something in play there because they'd want to rally around him to say, hey, that wasn't your fault the other night. That was our fault, and we're going to support you here. But Murray came in and played really well. I think everybody knows that. I just wonder, and I throw it out there, I just wonder what the situation would have been if Mike had called a timeout after the third goal, after the Brassard goal, and the Zach Smith goal doesn't go in because the energy in the building's deflated. Pittsburgh's got a chance to re-energize and refocus, and they get out of the period down 3-0. I wonder what would have happened then. You know, but that's too late. It's just too late.
Carlson, his pass, Ryan, a shot blocked by Strike. MacArthur, out in front, they score! Derek Brassard, 3-0 Ottawa! Keep the play alive if you're Erik Karlsson. Hard play by Bobby Ryan. Never quit on it if you're Clark MacArthur. And what a feed to Derek Brassard, who beats Mark Strike to the net. You got to wonder if they're going to call a timeout on the Pittsburgh side of things to slow down this Ottawa steamroller that's just pile-driving the Pittsburgh Penguins in front of Marc-Andre Fleury.
We expect them to come out with their best game of the series, so we've got to raise our level of play to a level that we know that we're capable of, and we know that they're going to come with a push, and we've got to push also. So it's about getting ready for tonight, regrouping, last games in the past now, and we handle this one the same way that we've handled all the games in the playoffs.
One of the best players in the playoffs, Dion Phaneuf, further to what Pierre was saying about a possible timeout. What do you expect tonight in Ottawa, Pierre?
I think Crosby and Malkin probably play their best games of the series. The biggest thing for Pittsburgh is finding a way. I talked about winning faceoffs, but getting people to the net. Obviously, most of your listeners in Montreal can't watch our show, but I spent the afternoon here at the rink putting together a package of one of the things that's really ailed Pittsburgh in the series. They've only scored 3 goals in 3 games, 1 per game. They can't get to the net. Their smaller forwards cannot get to the net, and that's where they're going to need either transition chances, so that means breaking the 1-3-1 or the 1-4 delay, whatever's being implemented by Guy Boucher and staff, or making sure that you have quick cycle plays, pucks back to the point, and then get bodies to the net off the feed from the icing line back to the point. Because they're not getting, you'll see it if you watch the show that we're doing, they can't get any bodies to the net at all.
Pierre, for the Senators, the power play number is kind of glaring at me today. I want to get your take on it. 0 for their last 21 and 8 for 74 in the playoffs.
It's amazing, Mitch Gallo, but they were 23rd in the league on the power play, talking about Ottawa this year, and a lot of people thought they would be a lot better than that because of Guy Boucher and his ability as a power play coach, but that hasn't translated here. A lot of the other stuff that he's implemented clearly has translated. What's amazing to me, this is 2011 Boston Bruins all over again. The Boston Bruins went one series without scoring one power play goal the year they won the Stanley Cup. That's what this reminds me of with Ottawa here. So it's pretty similar, the numbers that the Bruins had in the playoffs on the power play to what Ottawa's done on the power play in this 2017 playoff season.
I was going to ask you if the 4:30 local start was going to have an effect on one team or another, but that was before the news about Ryan Johansson. Again, if you're just joining us, Ryan Johansson suffered a left leg injury last night, underwent surgery.
And just to add, it's been tracked that his last shift was at 8:42 of the overtime period, It's not long before Corey Perry scored the game winner, so he was playing right up until that final shift.
That's bizarre.
You saw him labor coming off, though.
Yep. Absolutely.
After he got hit, I mean, I saw it, and I think you guys probably saw it too. But he was laboring coming off,
and so he's done. He is done for the playoffs.
It was a collision by the Nashville bench, just inside the blue line.
Right. All right. So we got another 35 minutes to go here. Craig Button's the Memorial Cup begins tonight, and we're gonna hopefully get some more information before we leave at 6 for the Friday scrum. Right. Thanks as always, Pierre. Have a terrific weekend. We'll do it again on Monday.
Thanks a lot, Mitch. I really appreciate it. Thanks for a great week, and enjoy your weekend, everybody, especially the long weekend. Take care.